Here I am. I was actually really shocked when I got the text message from Moosh to say, hey, Roshi'd like you to give the student talk. And what I really find most ironic is that she said, well, talk about your practice, your experience, and lately my practice has been to not talk. So I've really spent a lot of time with that too, because I talk way too much with my mouth and in my head constantly. So, but last month when I was here, I was talking to Roshi and I told him that I find, we were talking about practice, and I said, I find at home right now, during the past several months, I said, things have really, it's really been tough. There's a lot of things on a whirlwind for me. And I said, sometimes I find practice challenging at home, away from here. And I so cling to the harmony and the strength of the Sangha here. And I go home and I get caught in a whirlwind. And so I said, it's sometimes a challenge for me. And Roshi, of course, then said, well, what do you mean by challenging? And I had no answer, none, except to go home and start to think about why I thought things were so challenging at home. But my parents are where I need to focus my attention. Mom has dementia, and several of you know it, and it's been progressing, and progressing a lot. And recently, every time something happens that affects her brother died, and it affects her, and when all these things happen, she doesn't recognize me at all. I am her sister, her youngest sister, and she, even if I have her sister in the car with us, and that she, I think her sister thinks it's a little weird because she keeps saying, hey, Marianne, and she's looking at me, and I'm like, and then I just answer. I answer her as Marianne would answer her, because that's who she needs there. That's who she's looking for, and she's looking at me. And so it's not about me or her recognizing me. My practice is to be there for her. So, I try to do that, and I look, and there are things even that she doesn't recognize a chip bag outside in the yard, and she thinks it's a red bird that's had a bunch of babies, and somebody picked up the bag, and she talked to me at the table, and she said, oh, the poor babies, are the mom left them. And so all that's left of my mom, and because we can't converse in any other way, it's just her heart that's left. And I struggle sometimes to be there for her. And I get caught in my head, and I get aggravated, and she constantly will ask me, are you going to work today? Are you going to work today? You're going to work today. I'll stop over before I go to work, and I work shift work, so sometimes I work nights. So I'll stop for that 2 o'clock cup of coffee in the afternoon, and if I've had a bad night the night before, I'm in my head, and I'm aggravated that she just, are you going to work? Are you going to work? Are you going to work? And there's no other conversation. You're going to work today, and I'll answer her, and I try to answer her with patience, and then at some point, I realized, what's the difference? Why can't I just sit there and go to my breath and sit? And because I know she's going to ask me the same thing over and over again. I know it. And so I'll go and just sit with her. And so I'll answer her once or twice. And then I kind of sit in silence. And I try to do my practice. I try to, because if I can get there, the question isn't if I'm going to work. It's I can hear her. If I get quiet and I stop and get everything else out and I go to my practice, what I hear is she remembers that I work a very dangerous job and she's worried about me. And that's why she's worried, am I going to work? Because she's worried. And so to realize that and to be quiet and know that's all that she's got is worry for me, then how can I be aggravated? How can I even get caught in my head and be short with her? So, you know, I've worked from that spot with her. And then there's my dad. And my dad is 94, he'll be 95 in October. and he actually mentally, he's very sharp. He's really good, in good shape. He gets a little forgetful, but when I stop and visit, he is very hard of hearing. That's his one of his biggest problems is he's enormously hard of hearing, and he will not get a hearing aid. He says he doesn't like them, and is not going to do it. And even the suggestion to maybe go to the ear doctor and maybe he can clean them out for you, and it would be better. That doesn't work either. But as I sit there with him, and that frustrates me, because he'll try to have a conversation, and he talks, and when you answer him, he doesn't hear you. But then most of his conversations, sometimes it's just that he wants somebody to be there, because my mom's no longer there for him. She's gone. And he takes care of her. And so when I show up, it's not that he really even wants me to kind of interact. He wants to be able to have somebody sitting there with him that will hear him. And it's not about me being heard anymore. It's about me hearing him. And so it's that same type of situation. I can go and I can sit and I can quiet. If I can quiet myself and quiet my mind and go to my practice and focus and realize that he just wants somebody there for him, then it doesn't matter if we're talking about New Orleans in the 40s and the restaurants that were there and the restaurants that are gone and where he used to go dancing, because he loved to go dance. But the other thing he likes to talk about is the war. He went as a boy. He went at 17 and he enlisted in the Navy right after the U.S. entered World War II. And that was a major, as much as I don't like the stories and I don't like to hear them, and my brothers love them, but it's hard for me. And it's hard for me to hear it, and that shouldn't matter. It doesn't matter, I sit and I listen. And sometimes I really, that in his political talk is, it just gets, and I go and I get caught, and I get caught in me. I don't want to hear that. And I struggle. I struggle a lot with that. And so I'm trying to be quiet and go. And I'll sit. And so since he's talking, and it's not anything I can remember anyway, because the restaurant is long gone and long closed, and the war and Squeaky Anderson is gone, and all of those things. But I can sit and listen. And I can be there for him. I can be present. If I do my practice, I can be present and hear that he just wants somebody, because my mom's not there for him anymore. And so I do that. I really try to be present for him. But about a month ago, he couldn't talk. He couldn't talk, and we don't know how long it went on from the night before, but my brother called me, and they said, we're taking Dad to the ER. And so we're at the house right now, and they're loading him up, and we're taking him to the ER. And so I showed up to get my mom, because she can't stay alone anymore. And so I picked her up, but then she got worried again, and of course she was looking for Mary Ann to bring her. So Mary Ann brought her to the hospital. And my niece got really, really weird about it. She was just, I can't believe Grandma doesn't know you, doesn't know you. I said, it doesn't matter. We all need to do what we can for her, and she's worried, and this is what she does when she gets worried. But my dad, they brought him into the ER, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him, but he looked, and he could look at me, and we made eye contact, and I knew that he knew me, and originally he kept trying to speak, and I told him, I said, don't. It's okay. Let's see what happens. Dad, let's be here. And both my brothers came, and my family's like a tribe. Everybody showed up and took over the ER waiting room. And there's two people in, and they kind of somehow, everybody finds the back way around to get more people in. But my brothers decided that that with only two people, and the guard was getting mad, that I should sit in the room with him. And that they, because their jobs are talking and selling and dealing with people. So they left, and they still had to mind their jobs. So they said, you stay, because when the doctors come in and out, we will need to know. And then everybody else will shuffle in as they can. And so 5 hours, I sat in the ER with my father. And the ER is a kind of interesting place to be for 5 hours, because you hear people come in and you hear suffering. You hear it from outside. It's all around. And my dad, they weren't giving him, they were monitoring him, but there was no medicine. And they didn't know, they couldn't figure out what it was, and we actually spent several days not knowing. But 5 hours, I stayed in the ER with him. And the only thing, there was the monitor, and there was him who couldn't talk, and as much as he likes to, and there was me. And I knew the only thing I had, and being so worried, is to be there, is to be present with him. And so I went to the count over and over, and the nurse would come in, and we would talk, and we would do what he needed to do. And I would go back, and it was such an experience to sit with my father during those 5 hours. I don't like hospitals. I don't like needles. I can't, the sight of blood is hard for me. Even seeing my own scar from my surgeries kind of makes me a little queasy. So, but when I was there and during those 5 hours, he was quiet, and I did as much of trying just to bring myself back and bring myself back so that I could be there. And then I could see when he wanted his little sponge water thing, because he couldn't have any fluids, that I could do that for him. And that he was cold and he was awake, and there were no drugs. And he got really quiet and he got really calm. And it wasn't anything then, he and I sitting in a room, and we could have been in a room anywhere, but he was in distress. And I was so happy to be able to be there, to have the experience with him. And it was, you know, it was my practice that kept me for 5 hours, being present with him as much as I could. And so anyway, what ended up happening with him was that he lost, he had a clot. He has a clot in his artery. And he lost blood flow to his brain. And at his age, there's nothing that they can't operate. So it's monitoring it with medicine, and which means lots of trips to the doctor to adjust the medicine. And we're kind of still working on it, the family. And it's what do we, it's you know, if it goes too high, if his pressure goes too high, what medicine does he take? And then if it drops too low, what do we put him on? What does he take? And he monitors it, and he monitors it well. And since that happened, I've taken him to several of his appointments. And he tells me each day, he says, today I didn't feel as dizzy as I did yesterday. And I feel better. And this is where I am today. Here I am. This is where I am today. And I'm so inspired by how he does that,